Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to New Books Network. I'm your host, Schneer Zalman Neufeld. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Ken Shep about his debut children's book titled A Gift of Feathers, published by Fywell & Friends in 2023. Ken Shep received his MFA from Columbia University, enjoyed a successful career as a journalist and business writer, and now writes children's books and literary fiction. I'm so glad his book has brought him to our program. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Salman. Thank you very much for the opportunity to have this conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. So to get started, could you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to write this book?
Sure. Happy to. My background is that I have been writing my whole life. As you mentioned, I did get an MFA, and I went that really intending to write fiction. And basically, I wrote everything but fiction. So I spent a lot of time writing business journalism. My specialty became retail. I wrote a lot of business reports. My specialty was brands. And I worked for nonprofits. I worked for an organization called the American Jewish Committee. I did work for that organization. At some point, I thought, if I'm actually going to do something, I really need to do it. You know, there's only so much runway here. And about 10 years ago, I started to write short stories and I started to write novels. And I did not really intend to write a children's book. The children's book happened because I had an idea based on my mother, who lived to be 99. And it was after her death, when I found some time and had this idea, that I began to write this book.
Right. And before we get into the details of the book that we're going to discuss today, I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about your writing process. So you say that at least part of your literary focus is on adult fiction, and then here you wrote a children's book. What is the writing process like for you? And in particular, is it different for you if you're working on a children's book or you're working on something intended for a more mature audience?
That's an interesting question. I actually hadn't thought about it. I think the process is somewhat the same. Before we had this conversation today, I spent most of the day working on or revising a novel that I'd written. And I think that it's the same in this sense. I like to write things that are personal. I'm not spinning a lot of fantasies. I'm trying to connect to something that's emotional to me. And in the adult fiction, you know, I've written books that are sort of coming of age, and I'm working on a book now that's really, I would say, being of age at the other end of life. what you encounter when you're, as I said, there's less runway. And looking back, what has your life been about? What have your relationships been about? That's the children's book is the same in the sense that I'd like to deal with serious subjects. So this children's book, in a sense, is about life and death. And the process is really a tremendous getting it all out, trying to get it out without a lot of editing, being as free as possible, knowing that what you're putting down on the page the first time could be a really crap, but giving yourself the freedom to really be as lousy as it takes to just get it out there. And then to revise and revise and revise. So today I was working on a novel that I thought was done and dusted. And my issue is I'm having trouble finding a literary agent. And I'm about to give this novel, which is 71,000 words, to a writer who, an author who also does some, literary consultation. And I thought, well, before I give it to him, let me really look it over. And looking it over, I felt, wow, this actually worked, because I hadn't read it in a year. So now I'm looking at it with new eyes. And I thought, well, that's not bad. I feel good at having written that. And then I came to some chapters and I thought, well, that really sucks. not that it sucks. It's just, I'm not sure what I was intending to say there. That's not holding my interest. So I went back. And it was frustrating. And I thought, what am I really trying to say here? Because it's disconnected with everything else I've been saying. And I thought, I think right before actually we began our conversation, I got to the point where I think I have that now. So if you connect that to writing the children's book, the children's book was originally, it's a picture book. And it was a much longer manuscript than a picture book requires. As you said, this is my first children's book. So I had written a 71,000 word manuscript. Now I'm going to write a children's book. How long is a children's book? Well, after I wrote the manuscript, I found out from the editor that a children's book is 1,000 words. I had already written 71,000 words. So this has to be a piece of cake. I sent her the manuscript. She said, well, it's a little too long. It was 1,200 words. It ended up, I think, about 800 words. So in that sense, I think it's a really great complementary discipline, because every word needs to mean something. It needs to reveal the character and move the plot and move the reader emotionally. And you only have 800 words to do that. The difference with a children's book is that, and I didn't know this, and this is what I learned having done this. If I'm writing a novel, I'm responsible for everything. I'm doing the scenery. I'm doing the dialogue. I'm doing the entire production. In a children's book, the scenery is really up to the illustrator. So that takes a lot of words out of it and a lot of the description. And so the children's book is more driven by the dialogue and a few stage directions. But I needed to take out all that I intuitively was used to putting in. What's the color of her hair? Where was the chair? How did she move? Who waved her hand? All of that mostly disappeared. And the wonderful surprise was that the illustrator took my words and gave back to me something that was from her imagination. And some of it was much different than I would have come up with. And by the way, the illustrator's name is Romina Galata, and she's really quite wonderful.
Yeah. So I want to come back to the illustration in a little while, but because once we talk a little bit about the plot of the story, but I am curious just on a more like a general level, I'm curious if having an illustrator in some ways requires author to give up some of the control that they would have in an adult book, where, as you say, they're kind of stage managing everything. Suddenly there, you know, is there a feeling or a anxiety or something around giving up some of that control? Hey, someone else is going to be part of this production, you know what I mean?
No. Give up control? What, are you crazy? Giving up control is not one of my favorite things. I doubt if it is for an author.
I hear you.
I mean, I think being an author is a way for, in my case, I think it's probably true for a lot of writers, to channel your obsessiveness so it doesn't drive the people you live with crazy. Only it drives you crazy. And then if you're lucky, you can create something that, a piece of art. So you've transformed your mishigas, your craziness, into something that's useful to other people. And yes, I think that, I mean, I guess in this case, it wasn't quite the same thing. I didn't react to it as if someone else were going to, you know, talk about the writing. Romina brought talent and skills that I don't have. I didn't really feel quite what, I mean, I would have expected to feel that resistance to giving up control, but I honestly didn't, and it may be because I couldn't do what she could do.
Right. So you knew your own talents and abilities, and
yeah, I needed that help. So in that sense, it was complementary, which is nice. I mean, that's something that doesn't happen normally in my writing. I think it might be more akin to, you know, someone who's a playwright, where it's the production requires people, a community of talents, and writing a novel typically, as far as I know, does not, or not in the same way.
Right, unless it's like co-authored, you know, which sometimes happens, but that's a different kind of relationship, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you read a lot of books for children, or you really, focus on adult fiction? And I'm curious if there are particular writers, either for children or adults, who you feel inspire your own writing and your own creative process.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm never able to answer that question well, because the honest answer to that question is I don't read as much as I should, and should is the issue there. I guess I could spin off some authors, but I don't have that on top of my head. In terms of, you know, reading kids' books, when I realized that I was going to write this children's book, and then I wrote other manuscripts thinking I'd write other children's books, and I wrote, for example, a sequel to a Gift of Feathers, which I hope will be published, and it's the same characters again. But what I did was I spoke to my grandchildren, who are phenomenal readers and writers, and probably can give you a much more comprehensive and intelligent answer to who they read than I could give you. And I asked them, because I showed this manuscript and some other children's story manuscripts, picture books, to other editors of children's books. And the feedback I got was that Well, your sensibility might be for an older child. A picture book like this would really be probably for a kid who's 3 to 7, something like that, and to be written probably with an adult. And I was writing, like, as I said, I prefer more complex characters and themes. And so then I was thinking, well, maybe I should be writing a book for middle grade or a young adult. So I did go to my grandchildren, and they gave me some phenomenal titles, which I read. And then I started writing what I thought would be a middle grade or adult novel. And now that novel is about 65,000 words, which is longer than a typical young adult, which I think the sweet spot there, I'm not sure. I think it's more like 50 or 60,000 words. But also my problem there was I was writing about a kid. First, he was going to be like, I don't know, 11 or 12. And then I was getting into subjects that required an older kid. I wanted to talk about issues of sexuality, coming of age. And so the kid kept getting older and older. Now he's 15. Which gave me a more latitude with what I wanted to write about. And also, I think I wrote myself out of the young adult genre in doing that. So I think I may have another adult piece of adult fiction. But it did start out by thinking about what's the next children's book that I want to write. And I do have a couple of other, as I said, manuscripts for children's books that that I've sent out. So far, they've not been accepted by any publishers, but they're written. And plus this sequel to A Gift of Feathers, which I'm optimistic would be published.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Right. I mean, I think from what you're saying, it sounds like, that you start off with a certain idea of who the audience or the age group that might be interested in the work is, but then the creative process could take all different unexpected directions, and you could start a manuscript or a story for children, and then it turns out it's really for adults, yeah. Or vice versa.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that's usually what happens if it works, then the characters start to take the book where it has to go. And that's what happened in the case of A Gift of Feathers. I had a specific idea. So I knew these characters weren't going to go any other place, because I knew more or less where this book was going. It didn't quite end up exactly where I initially ended it, because the editor or the associate publisher, Liz Zabla, who's with Fiwill and Friends, a Macmillan imprint, when she saw it, she had some really good recommendations, including another beat at the end. And so I added that. And so but it was different from what you're describing, with meaning that it wasn't characters who I set free and was going to watch where they were going. I had already had some pretty serious boundaries there because I had a pretty definite idea about the nature of the story.
Right. Speaking of the story, could you summarize the plot of the book?
Sure. So the story is about two girls, young girls, maybe 8 years old, who are ultimately contending with the death of their grandmother. And the plot simply is that these two girls, they live in the country and their grandmother lives in the city. And in the country, they have a house where and some land where they're used to raising chickens. They actually have 10 chickens. And since they're involved with that, they've even had a chicken. Recently, their favorite chicken has died, and they've contended with that. And they go to visit their grandmother in the city. And they're surprised that here in the city, their grandmother actually saves feathers, collects feathers. And they're wondering, well, where do you find feathers in the city? And she explains, well, what happens is I go for my walks, and every time I walk, I usually find a feather, and then I save it. And she's got these vases of feathers all over her house. And she sits the girls down and says, well, the reason I save these feathers, because as I get older, they remind me of my parents. And it gives me a warm feeling my parents are looking out for me. And so the girls understand that. And then she's, I guess, she lets them play with the feathers. It's a rainy day. They're going to make a mess. Anyway, they can play with the feathers. So they spread the feathers all over the floor, and they decide to count them. They count them, that there are 99. And Grandma says, oh, 99, just like me. Next year, you'll come back. It'll be my 100th birthday party. And then everything switches. It's a year later. They come back, and they're coming back for Grandma's funeral. And then the rest of the book is about Grandma's funeral and how they understand Grandma's death. And ultimately, the book becomes about the finality of death and the eternity of memory, because the girls take this when they go back home right after the funeral, find a feather in their yard, which typically is littered with feathers because they have chickens. But they find these two really special white feathers, and they save them. And then once a year, their father lights a candle to memorialize his mother in a Jewish ritual called Yahrzeit. And the girls, every time their father whispers a prayer, hold their feathers up in the reflected light of the candle. And they've learned how to, understand the death of their grandmother as a way to, and through the feathers, to remember her and what she meant in their lives.
Right.
So that's sort of the plot and some of what I intended the story to convey.
Right. Well, thank you for that. I'm curious, how did you come up with the idea of the feathers? What was there a particular inspiration?
Some of this, I guess part of this story was there were certain things I made up and certain things that just happened. So the backstory to how this came about was that my own mother lived to 99. She lived a very healthy life. And she was her main health problem in her 90s was that she broke her hip while she was at her exercise class. So she was agile enough to go for a walk every day. And if she saw a feather, she could bend down and pick it up. And she collected them. And in her mind, it was actually her brothers looking out for her. So after she died, on the first night that we had a Shiva at our house, which is a gathering of friends in a Jewish tradition, gathering friends and family to help the be present for the mourners. Well, on the way home, I found I found three feathers, beautiful feathers, around the corner from my house. And I have two siblings. I gave one to my brother, one to my sister, and I kept one. And I thought, And the sidebar here is my mother would always tell my brother and sister and me, that she'd find these feathers. And I would be a bit skeptical, a bit rational, try to be as supportive as I could be, but not really believe that these feathers had any greater significance. If she believed it, that's fine. But then I found the feathers. And then I thought, well, there's a story here. And I wrote something, or I wrote some notes down pretty quickly. And I had, when I was at my mother's, on the day of the funeral, at the cemetery, one of my granddaughters asked me a really smart question, of course. And I thought, oh, that's good. I'll park that in my head because that's really interesting. And then when I went back to write the story, I could not remember her question. We had a Zoom call. I asked her, I asked my son and my daughter-in-law, and no one could remember the question. So it freed me to sort of make up a story around a question or a lack of a question. And that's what happened. So fundamentally, the feathers, the idea of the feathers, the grandchildren and the grandmother were there. That was my life. And the actual, the plot is based on that, but I would say expanded from that core.
Right.
And I guess, yeah.
Sure. And I'm curious to go back to Romina, the illustrator. Mm-hmm. What did you hope the illustrations of the book would convey to readers?
In my mind, I was expecting characters that a grandma dot character that looked like my mother, looks nothing like my mother. my mother was a much, I don't know, she was petite and sort of elegant looking. And this is a very comfortable, huggable grandma in the book. And the same thing, I thought that the grandchildren would look like my grandchildren, and they look nothing like my grandchildren. And then, there were some spots where, there's one illustration that I would not have thought of, and it was really one of my favorites, where, in other words, she highlighted things to illustrate that were not necessarily the things I would have highlighted. And one of the favorite illustrations of mine was just sort of a throwaway line in the book where the girls get to the city and one of the grandchildren's wondering out loud, where did all these feathers come from in the city? And Romina in the book has this illustration, which is sort of an aerial view looking down from the point of view of two pigeons sitting on a ledge of a building, of a, a skyscraper, looking down at the city. It was just wonderful. And so that that's a value of working with somebody who has, you know, imagination and skill, and they see things slightly differently than you, and really adds something.
Right, right, absolutely. I'm curious. So you mentioned that in the book, the children have a chicken, Estelle, and the chicken dies. I'm curious what you think of the relationship between the death of their beloved chicken and then shortly thereafter, the death of their grandmother.
Right. I guess, in a sort of a literary jargon sense, the death of the chicken foreshadows, you know, another death in the book. But I think it meant that the two grandchildren, who are Tallulah and Rhea, again, named after, I didn't change any names. I used the names and then asked permission of my grandchildren to use them. But I mean, I think it meant that the children were familiar with death in a really visceral way. I knew that I'd spoken to my grandchildren. First of all, they really care for their chickens. They originally named their chickens after Harry Potter characters. They knew each chicken by its personality. They carried the chickens in their arms. These were like pets. These are egg-laying chickens. And so when a chicken died, it was meaningful to them, and they came up with their own rituals. They dug a hole, they buried the chicken. Sometimes they would write something on a piece of paper. That's like everything that was in my head that needed to be reduced to maybe one sentence and an illustration. But that sentence really had to carry all of that import. But I think that's what the death of the chicken, or the burying the chicken early in the book, means.
Right. And you mentioned that the book is really deals with death, and especially with children or young people confronting death. And I'm curious, have you had conversations with children about death and how they interpret it, make sense of it, respond to it?
I didn't do any research. I've had, my wife and I raised two children, and I know how they responded to deaths. And I know that some of the responses, I could see from their behavior that they were responding to a death. And then in this case, I think I had spoken to my grandchildren, when around the time that their chicken had died. But no, I did not go out of my way to talk to other children about death. I just used my own experience.
Sure, sure. And speaking of your own experience, so you mentioned that in the story, the son of the grandmother lights a candle every year to commemorate the passing of his mother. Right. And that's part of the Jewish tradition around death. I'm curious if you think of this, of your book, as being, you know, a distinctly Jewish book or a distinctly Jewish story, or if it's really kind of a much broader in scope.
I think the latter. I think it's a universal story. I think that the feelings are universal. The aspects of life and death are universal. I think it's told from a particular, from a particular point of view. The characters happen to be Jewish, and the rituals are Jewish. And perhaps the notion of how death and life fit together are maybe from my background, so maybe they're Jewish, although I think there's probably not that I don't consider myself an expert at all, and I'm sure there's sort of a multiplicity of points of view in the Jewish community. However,
I mean, you've heard that. You've heard people have said this.
Having said that,
you've heard tell.
Yeah, my own take on it is that in the Jewish faith, the body is disposed of pretty quickly. As quickly as possible, because that's not really the person. That's, I guess, the vessel that carried the person. And so that person remains with us in our memories and in the legacy of that person and in maybe our responsibility to carry on that legacy in the good works that we bring into the world. And in that sense, I think maybe there's a Jewish point of view, but I think dealing with the subject and the feelings is very universal.
Right, right. And I'm curious, the book really deals with issues of ritual and tradition as well as family. And I'm curious, are there particular traditions that you associate with your own family story?
That's a good question. I would say the idea, I've been around... That's a really good story. I'm sort of caught to think of a tradition because I do think ritual is important. I'm just thinking in terms of my own mother's death. I think there are some rituals that I kept. There are some that I didn't. I mean, from a Jewish point of view, one would say Kaddish for a year, a special prayer every day. To memorialize the person, and I think to psychologically work through that mourning, long mourning period. I didn't do that, but I did other aspects. Meaning, I've said Kaddish on particular holidays. So I would have to say that. For me, the traditions that are important to me are a combination of traditions from my background being a Jew and my background as being an American. As we're having this conversation, we're just past Thanksgiving, which is one of my favorite traditions, and everything that means. So I value traditions like that. To me, separately, I once wrote something called America's Table, which is I hoped to create into a ritual that used Thanksgiving as a way to ritualize the celebration of America as a welcoming place for everybody. But just in terms of rituals, one curious thing is that I do have a ritual that happened as a result of this book, or it may be an obsession, or it may be a little craziness. But I keep finding feathers. And so I have feathers. I saved them. I've gone a step further than my mother, maybe because I'm a writer. So I not only saved the feathers, she put them in a vase, and then they became anonymous feathers. I try to write down, where did I find this feather? What was I thinking about at the time? Because to me, the idea of a feather, as it connects to this, is that when I find one, it stops time for me. I'm thinking... Once I see it, I'm thinking of my mother, and then I'm saying, what am I thinking about right now? What am I feeling? And so I think that that ritual, which I think is part of death, dealing with death, it makes us more attuned to life. That's something that is a positive that can come out of death. And through this ritual of finding feathers, it makes me more attuned to, I know this is something that we say now, but being in the moment. I'm not always in the moment, ever always in the moment. But when I find a feather, I'm in that moment.
Right. Well, that is something very special. The book is really just so beautiful, and there's a lot more that we could talk about, but we're going to run out of time.
Sure.
So let me ask you one last question. What do you hope young readers will take away from your book?
I hope that young readers would be able to come away from the book feeling a sense of comfort if they're really in a period where they're facing some period of grief. And I guess not sad. I hope they don't come away sad, but just feeling comforted and maybe a little brave about and happy to be alive.
Right. Well, that's a beautiful message to take away. On that note, a very positive note, thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts with us today.
Solomon, thank you very much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it. Time went very quickly. Thank you for your questions.
That concludes our program. Thanks for listening and have a great day.